while recording. This is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is not here right now, but Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I normally discuss new movies weekly. However, every now and then, we like to have these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentary tracks or something completely different. But this is our commentary track for June 2024. And guess what? We have completed our quest to cover all of the Pirates of the Caribbean films for audio commentaries. So we can now move on to a new theme. And our theme for the summer of 2024 is international. We're going out of America and into other countries to talk about various films. And for the first one up in this series, we are going to talk about Run, Lola Run, a.k.a. Lola Rent, the German film from 1998, released in the U.S. in 1999, celebrating its U.S. 25th anniversary, which at the time of this recording is actually playing in theaters right now. So if you actually wanted to see this movie on a big screen, you probably can't now because we're recording this and you probably listen to it way later. But if you listen to it on the same day we recorded this episode, you probably could have seen it on the big screen. So in some way that makes sense. Anyway, joining me to talk about Run, Lola, Run, we have host of the Brandon Peters Show. He wore out his sneakers to be here. It's Brandon Peters.
In the words of Gogol Bordello for this new theme, think locally, film globally.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Joining us also from the Milky Way Blues, more of a power walker at best, it's Yancey Burns.
Hey, guys. Glad to be here.
And from Movies, Films, and Flicks and Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, he crashes through glass planes on purpose, it's Mark Hoffmeyer.
Putting it all on 20.
Good.
Always bet on black.
How are you guys all doing today?
Excellent. I feel like this is a reward in more ways than one, like, for the Pirates. Like, quality-wise and runtime-wise, it's kind of a nice little, like, hey, guys, you made it.
Just seeing that Pirates 4 one that you did, the commentary, it brought back, like, horrible flashbacks from watching that movie. I dislike very few films. I'm really positive about movies, but I remember watching the fourth one and going, this isn't it. Like, this isn't how you do it. Like, this isn't... I know some people here enjoy it, but I just remember watching and going, oh, woofta. So I just want to let that out there. Let y'all know.
I don't know these people you speak of who said they enjoyed it, but
I don't enjoy it. I ended up being the defender.
Yeah, there we go.
It was very light. And then I saw the fifth one. I was like, oh, that's way better. Forget it.
Weirdly, it's the only two he watches now. So. glad to have you all here. I'm excited to kick off our international series. We've done a few foreign language films in the past year, but doing three in a row, celebrating various anniversaries and just the idea of going somewhere else for a change compared to the blockbuster pirate series, I feel just seems refreshing. This is gonna be a quick one. It's only an 80-minute movie. We will probably load this up with a ton of bullshit at the end because why not? We'll see. The plan here is we're all going to talk about this film. We currently all have it paused at 10 seconds in. So it's right after the Sony Pictures Classic logo fades out. And on the sound of go, I'm going to press play and all four of us are going to press play. And if you plan to watch along, sync it up. And
just going on the gut or the O part?
In between.
Gut-O?
As soon as I say that, press play, you're good to go. You listen to us, and that'll be great. If you're just listening to listen, you don't have to watch the movie along with us. You're good. You're already set to go. So.
Was that the go? Was that the go?
That's a good 1999 movie, Go.
Go, yeah.
Doug Liman's Go is a pretty good movie. You should listen to the Brandon Peters show.
Sounds right.
Talking about
very good movie.
He has a whole episode on it.
Timmy Ollie.
I do not have an episode on Go.
You don't? What am I thinking?
No. I have no idea, but I don't have an episode of Go.
I could have sworn you talked about Go at some point.
The Brandon Peters Sun Show.
Not at all?
No Go.
Why do I like Go? Not only do I have a specific memory of this, I have a memory of you guys talking about, like, No Doubt's New at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in the movie Go.
And Len Sunshine.
We talked about, Sabina Graves and I talked about a No Doubt music video once.
Hollaback
Girl? Maybe we
for got, New?
Not for New. We had Simple Kind of Life, but I don't.
What? Wait, Simple Kind of. They have a song called Simple. That sounds like
in my mind right now. I'm more certain that you have this and you've forgotten it than I'm messing this up. Like that's where I'm at with my head.
This is amazing.
We need some. Yeah,
we need to verify the fact that you've never talked about Doug Liman's Go.
Yeah, I have never talked about Doug Liman's Go. Man.
Why do I have this memory that you have?
I think I wanted to at one point, and it didn't work out.
It's not on Cult Cinema, right?
No, I pitched it to a guest once or something, and I don't think they took it.
What about Doug Liman's Jumper?
Nah, definitely not.
Welcome to the war.
You find my episode of Go, and I'll listen to it.
I don't think I will try. I just have a weird memory that you talked about Go for some reason. I don't know why.
It sounds like one that would fit my show for
it
sure.
It does. It seems like in the early days of the
this
show.
This is my, I have an episode now that's like that Kazam bullshit with Sinbad for Aaron. Like, yes, it never happened, dude.
Mandela affected my way into imagining you did an episode.
Yeah, you guys like ranked all the soundtracks of 99, didn't
we
you?
We did. I remember that. And that maybe it was in that discussion? Or we did the Pie? Soundtracks of the 90s, yeah. I don't know.
That seems possible.
Everybody's like, get to Run, Lola, Run, God damn it.
We're going
to
talk about this for another 15 minutes. So go. You know, it's when Sarah Polley was still acting primarily, way before she became a filmmaker. Timothy Oliphant was finding himself. I like when we both reached to that right away. There's so many other cast members. Scott Wolf and Jay Moore are just doing it. Okay, so let's talk about Roll a Little Run. Let's do this. All right, you guys ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1, go.
Go? You mean
not the movie that we talked about on the Brandon Peters show at some point.
That you definitely talked about.
Go Dogs.
I like Go.
Yeah, Go's good.
I don't
like everything.
That commentary is going to be great when we do it 6 months from now.
5 years from now.
I remember that was like from the director of Swingers, and then like Made was from the guys from Swingers Are Back.
That's Made how Cusack movies used to do it after Gross Point Blank. From the guys that brought you Gross Point Blank, Pushing 10. Mm-hmm. Serendipity, High Fidelity. It was all of this. Anyway, this movie.
Guys, what brung you?
We have a T.S. Eliot quote kicking us off here. And then some
Eliot.
Air Berger as well. Run, Lola, Run. As I said, it came out in 99 in America. I know about this film because, as you could guess, it was on Ebert. Ebert was talking up a storm about Run, Lola, Run. And I was like, I need to see this movie. And I didn't get a chance to until it eventually came out on VHS. But that's it. I saw it, and I was a big fan. I very much liked the style. I was super into the soundtrack. And like when The Bourne Identity came out, it's like, hey, Frank Patata's in this. That's fun. They're running. They're on the run. That's clever. But no, I've always been a fan of this movie ever since I've seen it. And seeing it, you know, recently for this commentary track again, I hadn't watched it in a while. It's just really strong. I'm just a really big fan of what Tickford's style is here. And, you know, for a movie that's like encapsulated within a very short running span, it does a lot, both thematically, visually, and whatnot. So, no, I've always been a fan of Run, Lola, Run.
Yeah, if you were a director and want a demo reel, Jesus.
Uh-huh.
Look at all I can do.
Quick heads up for everyone listening. I put in the Go Blu-ray for this. So I'm just going to be talking about Go while you guys are talking about Run, Lola, Run.
Fair enough. Go, Lola, go.
Brandon, when did you first see Go? Or Run, Lola, fuck off.
All right. So this is probably one of the most, like, probably in, if I had, like, make a list of the most impactful, most important films I've ever seen in my life, this one's going to make the list because it was December of 2001. I was in college. I had, was in my first semester at Ball State. I transferred after my freshman year. I was in my film genres class, and the professor decided for the last film to screen, he was like, hey, we didn't watch really any international features, this year during this class. So, you know, off the cuff, I got one for you. Let's watch this one. It's Run, Lola, Run. Now, me, at this point, my international experience, like at the time we called them foreign films, now we call them international films, it was like zilch. Like I just didn't check them out and whatever, you know. And this was my gateway drug. I saw this movie, blew my fucking mind. I was like, this was punk rock, you know, like this is like hearing Smells Like Teen Spirit on the radio to me after years of hair, you know, like growing up hair metal. And I couldn't believe it. I was just like, wow, this is amazing.
Just to pause you for real quick, because we're getting past the title sequence, that whole all the people forming the letters to form the title just then.
Yeah,
that was done practically. 300 extras formed each letter separately. And then Tickford did some compositing to get it all together, which took quite a while for him to get right. So
Anyway, yeah. Sorry. So yeah, I was familiar with the title of this movie, and I may have seen the box at the rental store or something, but like I saw this, I immediately bought it on DVD, and I started like preaching the gospel of this. And it was hard being in college and stuff in the little Midwest, you know, school, and be like, hey, you watch a foreign movie, and people are like, oh, subtitles, but they get like, this movie gets them over it like real fast. And yeah, I just can't, like, revisiting it over the years and just confirms I love it so much. It's just so cool. It brings a lot of MTV culture, video game culture, comic book culture, like all this stuff just in an inspired piece that has deep themes and so much to chew on in like such a short time, and just moves really fast. And yeah, it's amazing. And I am forever grateful for this film, because I started seeking out like Godard because of this film. I seek out Truffaut, like start going through like, what is there? I saw The Princess and the Warrior. I went and checked that one out because of it. And then I see Born Identity the next summer. I'm like, whoa, there she is. And I thought I wanted Franco Potente to blow up huge. It did not happen here in the United States. But yeah, this film is, I think, for what it is and everything, it's a masterpiece. I don't know if Tickford's been better than this since, but he was on the map and I was certainly seeking him out.
We'll talk more about Tickford, of course, as we go through here, but I do think he has some significant contributions.
He does, but
we'll talk about it. I forgot, by the way, this movie has those, like, the after all the credits, you still have the cast, and it does that, like, rotating around and putting the name.
Choose your fighter. Yeah. It's,
yeah. There's a lot of video game in this that I forgot watching this movie the other day. Yancy, when did you first see Run, Lola, Run?
This would have been a classic early DVD movie. I would have bought this probably. I didn't see it in the theater. I was still living in Torrance.
Were they famously don't have theaters?
Well, I don't think this played outside of, I would have had to go to Santa Monica or something to see it. And for some reason I wasn't compelled to do that, but I saw the movie on DVD probably the week that it came out on DVD. And yeah, I liked it a lot. It was part of there were a lot of movies that I sort of think of this movie as part of a sort of post Tarantino genre. I don't know what you'd call it, but
I mean, it's got some Wong Kar Wai-ish stuff to it too.
For sure, yeah, for sure. And apparently I can't think of another movie that did this before. Apparently he was basing it on a Kieslowski movie
called
Double Vision or something. I haven't seen it.
Blind Chance.
Yep. I just made myself sound like an idiot, but that's I'm pretty sure a straight drama. So this is sort of his popcorn version movie of that. And that's interesting. And then he went on to do it another Kieslowski script, right? With that Heaven.
Heaven. Yeah.
After Kieslowski died. But yeah, I certainly think of it well. I've only seen it once before on during that time. I remember being mostly impressed by Potente as a sort of such a complete lovable heroine. You know, that experience of sort of you get a crush on this character. You're seeing the first time in this giant movie in your face, and she's the sort of most amazing girlfriend you'd ever want in your life. And at least at 25, that was the impression I had. More than any philosophical stuff that I think worked, because I think this idea has sort of been implicit in movies since the beginning of movies. The idea you could do it two or three times, if you know, almost like take one, take two. And since I had already sort of split off from video games at that point, they gotten a little too labor intensive for me. I like to sort of do side scrollers and listen to music. And once it got more involved in that, I kind of dropped video games. So when I saw this, I thought, well, it's kind of like a punky Tarantino German version of Groundhog Day or The Bit in Wayne's World, where they do the whole, let's do the mega happen thing, you know. Yep. But this comes out and does it the first time anyone ever did it. But I think it's implicit there in the idea of movies, this sort of fantasy that you could just, well, give me one more chance to do it again, you know. So, yeah, it's a very impressive movie, especially for a first feature in terms of how we all heard of him in the West. From the West, isn't he? But in America,
as a breakout feature for sure. Yeah, this is in fact his third film, and I was looking that up because I didn't realize I would have assumed this would have been it has the energy of a first film for sure. But yeah, it's a sick prison.
More energy than most movies. It also belongs to a genre of movies where someone is running almost the whole time, and I can't think of too many other movies in that genre. But maybe during this,
I hope Mark has the answer for that as well.
I'm sure he does.
But Mark, when did you first see Run, Lola, Run?
It's kind of a weird story. So I didn't get to catch it in theaters in 99. But I remember my brother talked to me about it. He's like, yeah, man, there's like this German film with like this awesome German lady. And she's like running a lot. And he had kind of done similar type, like he would say like something like that for other movies. He was 2 years older. So he watched a lot more like cooler films than I did. And I heard about it. Then you see the box everywhere and I watched it. And it just like probably like in college sometime. And it just sort of blew my mind because it's with like Amelie, City of God,
right?
You know, like Old Boy. We're like, you got to understand, like back in the late 90s and 2000s, for me, at least as a college kid, I didn't have access to, you know, my parents weren't cinephiles. I would go to Blockbuster. I'd watched everything that was out at the theater that I worked at. But like, I wasn't too adventurous when it came to foreign films. So I think for like cinephiles who were teenagers when this came out, it's like a really important film because like first it has a Tarantino vibe, but it still holds up today. So it proves that it's not like a knockoff of it or like a kind of cynical cash grab. But yeah, I remember this movie's just always been like, I don't know. It's just always been one of those super cool movies you watched in college, for me at least. And no, when you asked me to be on this, I was super stoked. I was like real excited to be on this. So, and then also you were just talking about the director. Like I was reading Brian Raftery's book about 1999, and the director said his first two films weren't that great and he needed to make a third one to make money. So they shot this really quick, really fast. Like they were just running and gunning literally. And like, this seems like that kind of movie that needs to get made. Like there was a necessity to make it. They needed money. They made it quick. And I think that's why it works. And it's been kind of cool researching it, 'cause I never really read that much about it. It's always just been that cool film. But yeah, that's kind of my history with it. I love this movie.
In the time it took us to describe our first experiences with this film, we've gotten through all the dominoes of the exposition are falling. What the plot of this thing is going to be. It really, I mean, it's a movie that is literally on the run. It fires you up right away with what it's doing and just gets you going.
You know what's crazy about the propulsiveness too is normally you start hot and then it's like, how do you keep that momentum up? Like especially when you're playing the same scenario three times. Like it keeps it so short and fast and everyone's so good that it's like one of the rare films that starts off at 90 miles an hour and keeps you there.
The other one is of course Crank with Jason Statham, just obviously.
God, yeah. I need a shower after
those are the two.
Yeah. I think Speed is a good reference point for this movie too.
They're on an elevator that goes up and down. That's not fast. I'm kidding. It's a movie that goes, it moves. Yes, and we're
recording this stop on the, running on the, under on the 10 30th miles anniversary an hour, of Speed
today.
Up.
By the way, it's the 30th anniversary of Speed today.
Happy birthday, Speed!
You did it,
Wildcat.
You made it, kid.
But Mark, I mean, what you're speaking to, I think that's helped by the fact that we see the thing repeat itself three times, right? I mean, the fact that you have basically a short film that's, you know, given new life by way of like a continue or a reset every 20 minutes or so, that kind of helps in how a movie like this can maintain a certain sort of propulsiveness. Obviously, there's stuff going on in between or what have you that kind of gives you more context or more thoughts of the themes and what fatalism and what have you. But like there's certainly an idea in play as far as what can we do to make this thing this nonstop ride and while also just make it interesting.
Even the scenes in bed are interesting. Like yeah. they kind of,
well, they're funny. Running,
yeah. They're shot like, interestingly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just, you know, like he's like, yeah, I like you. You're my best. You're the best girl. I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I dig this
animation stuff threw me the first time I saw it. 'Cause like, I just knew like, okay, there's this like apparently a cool foreign flick, German, about this woman has to run to save her boyfriend's life. I had no idea like what the style was going to be for this thing. So like when this movie like kicks off and it's like there's animation segments in this, and granted I'm 13 at the time watching this, it's like, okay,
there's stuff shot on Shitio, there's stuff, you know, film, there's animation, there's black and white film stock.
Yeah, like I hadn't watched Natural Born Killers yet, so I wasn't used to being assaulted visually with so many different styles.
I was gonna say Natural Born Killers animation. Yeah. Too. Yeah. That's also a little bit on his mind making this.
Yeah, I and Yancy mentioned her hair. Like, this is like top all time haircuts in cinema history too. Like,
she's like the Tower Records.
You want every girl you date to have that haircut, yeah, like, of course. Even if it doesn't work. Like,
and here's
Amelie, like a few other movies, you could see the cuts all over the place.
Real quick, here that was the first instance of the flash forwards where Lola will tap into somebody, and we just get a brief like. you know, 10 photographs that detail what this person is doing and where they're going from there. And that is such a cool thing that I'm sure that's been done to some degree elsewhere. I can't think of it off, at least before this movie, I can't think of it offhand, but it's such a neat way to like provide just an extra plot that doesn't matter, but it's just there.
Well, it's just showing like the effect of it. Like it's going like, okay, we've got this surface level thing, but we're also trying to tell the story of how just a minute bit of time can change a person's lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, if she bumps her later, she does this. If she bumps her, you know, if she misses her, she doesn't bump her around the corner, she does this. You know, like it starts sinking in these deeper levels. I want to mention before, so for this, like I was going to go see it in the theater this weekend, but then I decided, you know what? I'm going to show it to my kids. I'm going to like see what they loved it. They were like fired up after this movie. My daughter's 10. She hasn't watched many international features, but like within the first 12 minutes, she stopped and was like, I already like this a lot.
It's a very agreeable movie.
Yeah.
Like even being R, like it's not like super violent or heavy in any way as far as content wise goes.
And it's the kind of movie that can give someone who's only seen regular movies an idea about the potential of movies, you know, which is very cool.
I didn't tell them anything about it, but when they realized it was going to run through everything again, but different, they got even more stoked. They were like, oh, and then they were waiting on they're going to do it again. And they're like, is there going to be a fourth one? Is there going to be like, they were like really like ramped up. They liked the idea and concept of how this was going.
I can't recall if we've talked about this before, but like, have we talked about like foreign films that like we consider like accessible, like gateway films? As far as how like gay people getting into, I feel like you're talking about
this. No, I don't know. We have actually.
We're talking about the like Dragon? Some degree, I think. As far as I know, it was when we talked about Crouching Tiger. Because for me, at least, that's an age where I'm at, where I'm having a chance to explore what I'm seeing outside of just the normal stuff, and that felt like a movie.
So you're saying all the films in the Sony Pictures Classics box?
In fact, I asked this question to myself, if not the panel, like, what was the first international movie you had seen? And I think at the time, my answer might have been Crouching Tiger, but now it's probably this. Like, either this or Life is Beautiful.
Like, this blew it open, man. This is like, for me, just like, whoa, it spoke. And then I was like, wow, they can make cool films outside of the United States. Oh, no shit, dumbass. But this one just caught me. And I wanted more. I was like, oh, and then my next class I had was like a film history thing that we did. Like it wasn't limited to just the United States. And so I was Vittorio De Sica, I was seeing stuff. Cocteau, I fell in love with Jean Cocteau at the time. And I did a speech. We had to like, I got picked for him, like a film, and he had to like do some research to give a speech. And it was, I think it was Orpheus, and I gave a speech, and my professor stood up and clapped because of my speech. He's like, I was like, oh, wow, that was awesome. And then for my next one, he's like, I'm really looking forward to yours after what you did with Cocteau. And I was like, okay, he did not like my second one. He loved my Cocteau one. The second one, he's like, nah. I was like, there wasn't shit in the library for it. Because back then, kids, I wasn't allowed to use the internet for my stuff. I had to go find books and all sorts of stuff, but. Orpheus is amazing. That's actually, if you want to go for an old one that might hook somebody, there's a lot of in camera.
He gets the radio signals in his car, like the
weird,
it's a good movie.
Yeah, and then it does it like literally the way they film that other dimension and stuff, and they like film it backwards and like there's some cool stuff in that movie that might attract somebody to seeing something old. I'm the weirdo that got drawn like. I was in love with The Seventh Seal the minute I saw it. Like I'm that weirdo when everybody in my film class had seen it. Cause that was a film that kept coming up in different classes. Like, oh, it's Seventh Seal Day. I'm like, what is that? And they're like, oh, it's just blah. And I saw it and I was like, holy crap, this is amazing.
I mean, we should talk about it, but The Seventh Seal is like, that movie's funny. I mean, there's a lot of like stuff in there that, I think makes it more accessible than people might anticipate where it's like a Swedish film about death. And it's like, it's a very enjoyable movie to watch, despite the context.
Well, it's got an ugly side of the Crusades. Like, it's,
like, it obviously is dealing with deeper themes and has a sense of darkness to it, but it's like, it's also about a, you know, death being kind of a nag, like playing chess and wanting to get out of this guy, like taunting him with his scythe and things. Like, there's stuff there that, like,
that's the first big that was the first big foreign film in America that really caught on with audiences. Yeah. You know, it really became a hit on the coast, at least.
I was looking at the box office, like the rankings of like what's the highest grossing foreign film, and like Run Lola Run's 48 with 7.2 million. That's not terrible.
No,
but a lot of them though are like came out much like a lot of them came out after it. Like there's Das Boot that came out, like all the regulars.
Yeah,
it's like this one was one of the like Cinema Paradiso was 90. Like I wouldn't say too many others came out. Like Water for Chocolate, The Postman, of course. Like those were, I remember seeing those nominated for like Best Picture, and they just felt like very stodgy nominated for Best Picture films. So when this one came out, you know, I'd watch like Enter the Dragon and Seven Samurai. So I knew about like, you know, like what Hong Kong or Japanese cinema. And like this one, I was like, oh man, European films aren't boring. So I remember that I was grossly wrong, but yeah. I just remember being blown away by this. I'm like, this is cool.
I do want to say that this film does an excellent job, and nobody is really done in an extravagant way, but you remember these little people that don't even like have lines or talk much, but like it's got such good characters. Like if you showed me like a cartoon picture of Run Lola Run without telling me it was Run Lola Run, I would probably recognize it real easy. Like it's really great. Like they do it at the beginning. You got the cop guy, you got the people she runs into with the pictures, the whole, like it's iconic, and it's not even like overboard with Lola's the only overboard character.
I think you're speaking to something that's not too dissimilar from the Star Wars thing, right? Where if you can see them in silhouette and recognize them, it's doing the job essentially. And
right, yeah, sure.
And this you know, along with the writing and what have you, as far as establishing who these people are in this movie, there is something distinct about each person that you meet, which is necessary. That's why like a movie like Groundhog's Day works, because you can have Stephen Tobolowsky and no one else looks or sounds like Stephen Tobolowsky. This movie obviously has Lola with her hair, and Manny's very yellow. But you have her father, you have the cop, you have Mr. Mueller, you have all these, the guy on the bike. Like you have all these very distinct figures who are dressed very specifically, have their hair very specifically. So like there's nothing similar about what you're watching as far as as you encounter these people. You can
speaking of Manny, when Theo James came on the scene, everybody was like, that guy looks like Manny from Run Lola Run, right?
He's
like his dumpy younger brother, sure.
Yeah, like I was saying, like that looks like Manny from I knew it wasn't him, but I'm like, he's got that look. They could be related.
Speaking of Manny, he's not a total dipshit, which I kind of like. He makes a mistake on the train. Like the conversations that they have in bed are kind of interesting. Like they're, I don't know. It's not just the frumpy dude who has like a really super awesome girlfriend that's coming to save him. Like there's something to the guy that's agreeable. So I kind of like that. He's not a total.
The movie bozo. Moves so fast. We don't have time to really process that. Lola and Manny are probably bad people.
Yeah.
Like he's got a gun. He may have killed somebody. She helps. She's accomplished. She was supposed to get stuff. They work with this Ronnie guy who, yeah, obviously.
I'll throw this out there. I don't think they're despicable people. I would say they're operating on with maybe a flexible morality as far as we can work with criminals and be fine. I don't think Manny is the kind of guy that has killed somebody. I think he's a guy that's maybe getting his feet wet, and if he goes too far, he'll get into that scenario. But I think this movie's largely operating on that idea where he's just the idea of him losing this money and knowing the kind of repercussions that's going to lead to. That's like him being like, this life is not for me. Like that is that is where he's at now. He's like, maybe I was going to be a gangster before, be cool like that. That's not what I want anymore. I want to get out of this. I think the end of the movie speaks to that kind of hopefulness where it's like, OK, good. Let's not be in this situation anymore.
Yeah, don't mess with Ronnie.
No.
Mark, I agree with you. I mean, he is a victim of circumstance. That's what sets this plot in motion, as opposed to like, you know, he did something dumb. It's just more he panicked in a moment and then didn't react.
Kind of a klutz guy.
He's not.
Hand the homeless guy his gun at the end, which is like, I would have emptied and been like, here.
I was waiting for a Deep Rising moment where the guy tries to shoot at him and misses.
Yeah.
We'll get to this too when we get to kind of the intimate scenes in the bed or what have you, but like, yeah, we don't have enough time to really get all of that we need to know about them, but the thing we do know is that by the start of this thing, they're not quite in sync with each other. I mean, literally, they're not in sync.
Because right.
Complaining about her not being somewhere when she should have been, or when she usually...
She got her moped stolen.
But in terms of their relationship, it's... I don't want to say, like, it's entirely on the rocks and they're about to break up. But there is something there that suggests that he's not pulling his weight. And as the movie goes on, I mean, we'll get to just more about things that they get more closer in sync with each other, but... There's an arc there for a movie like this that I think is impressive.
And thematically speaking, the director knows how to actually capture the speed of running by putting her next to buildings or barricades or fences to actually show the propulsion and not just someone hoofing it down the street, because that doesn't capture the speed. So like just even those little decisions showcase some movement and just like a very shrewd decision.
Well, you got stuff coming by the front of the camera. You've got the overhead. Oh, like it's shot so many different ways.
The hair.
Yeah. And I like the setups. Like there's a lot of these like set angles and stuff that repeat in this that feel like that has that video game culture where like, oh, I have to watch this cutscene like again because I died, and here we go again.
This
overhead's awesome.
We'll see it, but we'll see her also run through it different ways as we see it again.
There's no, I mean, what I kind of like is there's not too many shots. Like, you know what would be cool? Now there's a lot of style, like it's stylish, but it's not. I think
there's so much footage from this movie. Like it's only like an hour 20, but geez, there's probably so much footage.
And like the director was like, you know what would be cool if we did this? Like it seems there's a lot of shots, but it seems thoughtfully put together, even though they rushed it. So I like that. Sometimes like you can feel a shot that was like, you know what would be cool if we just like put it on the back of a dune buggy and just drove it around. You're like, what? Right. But it's actually, no, I'm going to see a dune buggy shot now. But I think it holds up well because there's not much artifice in it, I guess, even though it is very stylish. It's hard to do.
It has a punk rock feel. I mean, it does feel like not necessarily like we grabbed a camera and did it, because there's a lot of polish and style to what's going on, but it has the feeling of somebody that is willing to experiment and try things as far as the filmmaking is concerned.
One of the things I thought I noted in this recent viewing that I thought was kind of maybe get overlooked, but it does split screen. But it does split screen with film and like the shot on video shit, which seems kind of, I don't know that I've seen that a lot or anywhere, the two completely different stocks put together in a split screen.
Yeah, I can't.
I'm sure it's been done before, but I'm just like, offhand, I can't. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Run, Lola. You guys let me want to watch SLC Punk again.
It's in that box set.
It's in the box set.
You know, Jason Segel's character in that one really like spoke to me. Like he was like the real punk in that film. And he just wore polos and khakis, but he was like the real punk of the group. I remember watching that and being like, that's interesting. Just putting that out there. It's a good box set.
They're going to make a sequel to SLC Punk. Wasn't that a thing? Or did they even do it? Was that a thing?
I know he directed No, that wasn't a sequel though. What, Fat Kid Rules the World? Lilo directed that, but I don't think that was part of the world.
There is a 2. It's called Punk's Dead. SLC Punk 2 came out in 2016.
Oh. I missed it.
With Ben Schnetzer.
Do you remember there was a movie that tried to be like the like hip hop SLC? There was White Boys. Do you remember that one?
No.
It's the Boys with a Z. Please tell me.
I think so. It's. It's got that guy. It's got the one brother from.
It's one word. White
Ray
Boys.
Donovan, from Ray Donovan.
Dash Mihawk.
Yeah, Dash Mihawk.
I think of him as CG vampire in I Am Legend. Dash
the thin
Mihawk.
Thin red lines.
Oh, Piper Perabo was it? I don't remember.
The red line. Yeah.
Dr. Dre's in it.
And Romeo and Juliet.
Fat Joe.
Yeah, it's about like Midwest. You know. White homies that go to like Compton and does not work out.
Yeah, looking at this poster, I get it. I see the movie.
It's pretty. It's dark.
I feel like I've watched 90 really minutes dark. Looking at this poster.
Yeah, it gets really dark. It gets really dark. Yeah, it's not like ha 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 funny. It is a dark movie.
So it's not Malibu's Most Wanted.
I mean, they got to keep
it real. No.
Few things.
I got a GameCast. You either got a GameCube or a Dreamcast.
Jamie Kennedy was popular during this movie.
Yeah. So was Ghost Hey Diggs.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm an educated. Yeah. What were there? And Anthony Anderson.
Yeah, Anthony Anderson. Yes. Mm-hmm. Not in Go. I like that this robbery that they commit here. For one thing, I like that they're like the love between them is never questioned. Like, I, you know, there's a friction perhaps as far as like them being in sync with each other that I already brought up, but the idea of them doing whatever for each other, more so on Lola's side because she's the one running. I absolutely believe that she would go into this grocery store and be like, I'm going to do this with you. Like, and they would pull it off. I also like that this coat, they pulled this off fairly easily. I mean, what happens in the next 5 minutes? A little more tough, but but right here, it's like, oh, they got the money.
Is there any like information regarding his tattoo in his arm? Because I feel like it's fake.
Yeah, it's brand new looking.
So, like, I wonder if it has some sort of like meaning that
I'd have to see.
Looks like a chain, doesn't it?
See, like that totally looks like it was drawn on for this movie.
It looks like a katana handle.
Something.
The blade is always close.
Search this. Run. No, wait, hold on. Lola.
She has a tattoo on her navel.
Manny tattoo.
It's just like a sun type thing.
There's a Tumblr page devoted to this. What's that going to lead to?
Nothing. This would have been fun to shoot. Just the amount of coverage and you're just moving. Like,
moving, go fast. Thrill. Yeah, like, yeah, like feel like you're almost done every time. You know, like, oh, now you kind of know how things go. And you probably have to shoot every version of it and then move. Like,
hey, you know who? You know what Franca Potente didn't like doing in this movie?
What? Running?
Running. Running is
like, two packs of cigarettes a day.
Did she have a run devil?
She was smoking two packs a day. She wasn't in shape. Tickford chose her on purpose because she doesn't look very athletic. That was the idea here. And she's got to run around in Doc Martens. And I don't know if you know Doc Martens. Those aren't the easiest shoes to run.
Yeah, like, no. So I've heard. Were they married at this time, or they meet and marry after this movie?
I believe.
Right, it was his girlfriend, I think, already.
Okay.
I mean, it was a good casting choice. Like, it doesn't. You still buy the. Yeah, she's not. Like, you see that movie Widows with Cynthia Erivo running? I was like, yeah, she's a marathon.
She's a runner.
Yeah, I was like,
she brought that to the movie.
I was like, I'm tired watching this. But yeah, she's hoofing it, Lola. But she said when she was 23, they just were going off momentum on this because they were just moving so fast and it was just, they had to get it done so quick.
Oh, I'm sure the adrenaline of making a movie was what helped get her through it, but that doesn't make it easy.
No.
And no, Weasley guy.
That helps. 23 helps.
Patante on the soundtrack, the very techno heavy soundtrack. Patante, Tickford's helping with it, and Patante's vocals are on the soundtrack when you're hearing.
And the soundtrack is excellent too. It's got those Loki grunge guitars in there. It's got the techno electronica stuff, which was very popular. It's got rave culture to it musically. Yeah, it's just of that moment, and probably like most of our generations hit this and understood the importance and could relate to what's going on. Even if we weren't fans of that stuff, we're like, oh, seeing it put in motion like this is cool. But it's kind of, you know, they kind of like that Matrix moment, you know, like where you're seeing like, oh yeah, finally my generation's coming through here. So, you know, like stuff like that.
But yeah, so you're more or less, when it comes to German music, either David Hasselhoff or Rammstein, right? That's you?
Yeah, that's right.
Du Hass.
Yeah, Triple X really, Triple X really kicked open German rock.
Bang, bang.
Kraftwerk. I'm a Kraftwerk guy.
Okay, yeah. Zombie. So we've arrived at our first, like, end point as far as the three that we have here. I can't recall if I knew that it was going to do this reset thing when I first watched it. I just knew the running aspect of it. That's what I knew about. And so the idea that, you know, she dies like in this first round, it's like, oh, okay, that's where we're going. It's only been so long. What's next for this movie? And now we get this whole flash thing and it's like, okay, so we're going to try something
else. When I first saw it, and then they start doing the bag and the phone together, like my mind was putting it together, like, oh, we're gonna do this again, yes, like, you know, it kind of like it just refilled that energy to go again, and you're like, oh, well, things they're gonna be different, so what's up now?
So here's a question: I don't
know. They don't explain it why it happens.
I don't call this a time loop movie because it's not really a time loop, but. beyond like the movie explaining it, where is your head at as far as what's actually happening reality wise? Is it more, is she actually repeating things like without subconsciously knowing, or is it just a matter?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to have an explanation. It's an experiment in film, and looking at, it's a thematic thing, and just what ifs and all that. And it doesn't have to have like some overseer that tells you, like, you don't need to explain this. You just need to enjoy this ride and the fun that comes with. Now we know some things, and when we go through this time, the knowledge, we now are back a little bit further, knowing things that we're now ahead of them. We know things that they don't, and then we keep getting even more back. And you see this, you see these characters and everything get a grander picture of who they are, what's been happening, because we know things like her sad sack father. Like, we're about to, you know, we find out he's cheating on the mom with a woman. Oh, and she's pregnant. He's going to, it's going to leave. Then in this one, we find out, oh, it's not his kid. But we also, then later, we also at one point find, oh, no, in the first one, we find out that Lola's not really his kid. Then the second time, we find out that kid, the woman who's pregnant, not his kid either. So he's having this cycle of being this guy who's going to be stuck with women, fathering children of with women that aren't even his own.
We certainly have a context that puts us ahead for the most part. There are hints that, not that Lola like has seen this and is now purposely doing things different, but like subconsciously there are choices that, some choices that she makes that are informed by the fact that she's lived this, or there's a version of this that exists that she's done before that lead her to making certain kinds of decisions.
This is the only thing we never get anything more of with her mom. I assume her mom drinking and revealing that she's probably having an affair with somebody. That's always the same.
Mm-hmm. I was reading about the director. He loved video games growing up. There's a Star Wars game that he loved. And so with this one, he just thought three lives for her character.
Masters of Teras Kasi?
Yeah. And then she learns a little bit, which I kind of dig. But yeah, she doesn't know everything. This isn't like Bill Murray stealing money or anything like
that. Yeah, it's not a roguelite. I understand.
It's a... but it's enough to kind of like it. I don't know. I guess what I admire too about this movie, there's a gimmick, and the gimmick doesn't take you out of it. Like sometimes when a movie has a gimmick,
it doesn't explain the gimmick, and there's no need to. You know,
you just roll with it, and I don't know. Sometimes you can whiff so hard on a thriller or like with a gimmick if you just take people out of it. So it's like another reason why.
I also think it's not easily identifiable. I mean, you're saying gimmick, but it's like, it's not like there's one thing that defines, like a movie that's a gimmick is, you know, there's a bomb on a bus. Like, this is like, she has to run throughout the movie. Also, her timeline resets. Also, we see a glimpse of other people things because she runs into them. Chaos theory.
I think that the other people things kind of ease us into what's going to happen. So we have already seen like, oh, we've seen into the future what happened, and then we're like back, and it's like, wait, what? So there's kind of a time thing that's been given to us in that first 20 minutes.
The movie's teaching you how to watch it, which is that's a cool thing that I think film and television can do, as far as, yeah, like you're saying, ease you into to, you know, conceptually how something's working, that it, without having to like spell out to, and even movies that do spell it out can work. I mean, fucking Back to the Future 2 has a chalkboard scene. I mean, there's like things that you can do to make it easier on the viewer. But when a movie like this that is built around its kinetic energy, it's informing you visually like what the language of the movie is, and therefore you're now on board with it. I think that speaks to why an international audience can, you know, agree upon this movie, because the universality of what you're seeing visually speaks harder than like what the dialogue is.
Yeah. I mean, you could not do this way. Like audience level is dumbed down a bit to where like you couldn't just go, here's this today, and people be like, well, why is it happening? Was it they need someone, you know, like there'd be on a mainstream level. You couldn't, there'd be too much simplifying that would need to happen in a simple movie.
But it'd either be simplifying or over explanation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you would have this movie be 2 hours because it'd be devoted to backstory and really hammering down on what it is that makes this all work,
which would destroy all the kinetic energy and make it not as popular as it it should be at a crisp 80 minutes.
In saying all that, there is a Hindi remake called Lupa Lapeta that's on Netflix right now, which is which is 2 hours and 10 minutes. So,
they probably add two more.
Yeah, song.
Maybe, but short by Indian standards.
So, yeah, that is true.
That's
true.
It has that going for it. Maybe each one ends with a dance number, which, if anything, would make me watch it faster if I knew that.
True. So.
By the way, the father stuff that we got to, we talked over the first part, but like, it's pretty devastating, like his reaction to Lola, like her coming in and being like, I need help right now. You're the only person that can help me. You're my father. And his reaction is, I hate you and I'm going to throw you out of my building and I'm leaving you and your mother. Fuck you. It's such a, like, we don't know these characters, but oh my God.
This guy gives one of the best performances in the movie.
He's very good. It's devastating to think of, like, if you're, I'm following this character who I'm rooting for and her father is entirely rejecting her in every way possible.
Including that he's not her father. That is just, and then boom. And then you got this little guy who's like an asshole to her in every bit of the age. But he gives us the kind of impression that, you know, Lola and him don't have, she only comes around when she needs something, you know, that type of idea to let us like kind of imagine who Lola is a bit outside of her and Manny.
I mean, it certainly seems like, you know, they're the black sheep type characters. I still don't think there's a villainy within the two of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So even the woman that he's having an affair with or whatever their plan is, like, the fact, you know, business suit, long red hair, like you can identify this person instantly. Like it's just right there.
I feel it's like, isn't it like, I feel like it's kind of like a, what's the name? Who is Prince Charles shacking up with? What's her name? Over Diana, his wife now.
Camilla.
Like, I feel like she's like a visual, kind of like, not quite out of the movie, but like that's who it's trying to make it up like.
Oh, stop crying, Lola.
That's a wig, by the way. I don't know if you know that.
Hmm.
It's currently in the British Film Museum.
And this is also kind of a different character for 99 as well, as far as Lola's concerned. Just she kind of has she's the one who has the agency. She's going through a lot. She's not just around to kind of be there for the dude. It was kind of fun to watch. Like, I think the character holds up.
Well, Manny just sits and waits and tries to make phone calls. She's proactive, running around. Like, she's more desperate than he is, and he's the one who's going
to... To be fair, she told him to wait in the phone booth because he's ready to rob a store at gunpoint and take money that way. He has an option. She just told him to stand by, and she'll do what she
can. I like how anything for hundreds of years, it's in the movie, or for 100 years, there would be a guy running to save his girlfriend.
Yes, and they made on that level, right. Yes. Yeah.
And so they made him a little bit of a... He's not, I mean, I think I like him least of the four of us, Manny, and I'm a little bit like, you can do better than this guy, Lola, but...
I think we're all sitting here praising Manny. I just think we're justifying, like, how he wound up in the situation. I'm not saying, like, but Manny rocks otherwise. Like, I don't think that's
I'm just saying they balanced it so that she's, you admire her more than you admire him.
Well, yeah, it's called Run, Lola, Run.
Well, you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, it was going to be called Sit, Manny, Sit, or Wait, Manny, Wait, but...
That'd be like a Jarmusch movie.
There.
Or he just has to drink coffee and he meets different people while Lola's run into him.
I like that German Laura Dern is just standing in the hallway, by the way.
Yeah.
What's interesting, about the Manny thing, I mean, right now that's where we are. But Lola is clearly in control here. She's doing the most, what have you. Like, obviously, you know, regardless of why Manny's waiting, I mean, he is waiting. He's the one that's not doing anything while Lola's doing everything. Right. The end, we'll talk about this again by the end of the movie, but I mean, the power kind of shifts at the end as far as how they solve the situation and what agency Lola actually has in the end, despite her accomplishments.
Yeah,
it does have a turn as far as
that I goes. Wonder, is this a set that they just redressed for the casino?
That's a fun question.
Because I could imagine that. Like, they kind of have a similar paint scheme and the...
It has a similar look. I know the casino. Yeah. I know the casino thing is a real casino that they had to, like, spend a lot of time trying to just to get the permissions to get in.
That makes sense. Yeah. And when you're shooting, when as fast as you are, as low budget as you are, location, really location, location. Yeah, this is probably an actual place. So, yeah.
And it's a shrewd choice, though, like with such a low budget to do the three different. She's running on the same street three different times. You just set up a different crane movement during her running. Like, it's a smart idea to keep the budget down. And then,
They shot in Berlin. And, you know, if you're shooting in the same, like, the same few blocks, you're probably going to have similar architecture and whatnot. So, I'll. Has a little bit of a resemblance to each other. He's like a slightly taller, more gaunt Hugo Weaving, right? The father.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hugo Weaving or Hugo Weaving lookalikes at a good 99.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he was in the Burly Brawl as one of the extras. Are we going to pass Laura Dern? Oh, there she is.
Is that Julian Sands a little bit? Or no, am I?
There's a Julian. Yeah, it's Julian Sands beats Hugo Weaving, for sure. Oh, I forgot we get a flash with German Laura Dern.
Mm-hmm. Right here. Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, it was funny. My kids, when they saw the S&M stuff, go, what? Yeah, it was funny.
It's German.
Yeah,
German.
They're having fun. They're playing. Playing games.
Playing doggy.
They're playing Hide the Bratwurst.
This would have been cool to watch in a theater in 99. Like, I got my first job at a movie theater in 99. And that was a cool summer, watching all those flicks in the theater.
Cool summer.
Was that a 99 song? No, that was way before Ace of Base.
Well, Ace of Base. Way before it was.
And then, like, Banana. Well,
Bananarama, and then it was Ace of Base in the 90s.
And that's it. Those are the only two versions of Cruel Summer that I'm aware of.
Nope. No others.
No others.
Nope.
And no one on this podcast will certainly defend that fact. So.
No. There's never been another Cruel Summer. There are two Cruel Summer.
What was I going to say? Forgot now. What were you just saying?
Well, just working in a theater in 99.
That's like, right. I was tempted to go and see, because it's in theaters right now. I was I was like, well, I have it.
$4.50 every day here.
I was tempted. I was tempted to go to the theater and be like, should I go to a movie theater and watch World of Rome? And I could, because it's in a theater that's far enough away where I'm like, do I want to spend the gas money to go this distance versus just watching the 4K that I have right here?
It's only at Landmark Theaters, right?
It's at a Regal that's near me, but again, it's like 20 miles away, and it's like, it's not that far, but it's far enough.
Well, they keep touting this new 4K restoration. I'm like, I already own that.
That's the other thing too. I'm like, it's not like it's restored again. So.
Yeah. It looks great, by the way. This restoration is just that's magnificent.
Yeah,
and I've seen this from DVD to Blu-ray to
VHS, like I said, VHS.
Yeah.
This is one of those movies, though, that gets passed along with VHS tapes, DVDs, but it actually holds up. Like, I remember when someone handed me a Boondock Saints VHS tape, and I watched it, and I was like, I don't know. I enjoyed it, but I was like, well, this, like, people were so diehard over that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, like, yeah, no. Talking,
oh, wait, like, are there fans of that movie?
Like, edgelords, I guess, you know. But, no, it's fun, but I remember watching it and being like, this is like, you know, this is Pulp Fiction. So, I mean, it was always fun getting handed movies, and then they were just awesome and blew your mind. Because, you know, at 17, I watched a lot of movies, but I distinctly remember things like, let's see,
Mark's Roger only and Me, 17.
Roger and Me, and like Being There. I remember watching those around that age, and they just, like, my brain exploded. I was like, this is like Election I love so much. So it's like, I think that was that age where you just bond with these movies. And this was one of them. It came a few years later.
The cool movies that, you know, they weren't the big, like your Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, getting just like, I don't know, the movies that people were watching, but you felt like you had to show somebody or someone showed you. Like, it wasn't like, you know, like everybody.
You know, for many years, MTV's Best New Filmmaker told me about movies. So it's like Wes Anderson, Guy Ritchie.
Paul Thomas Anderson was one of those, right?
Thomas Anderson. Back when they tried on the MTV Movie Awards, they actually were informative in that matter. You're not wrong.
Like, yeah, there was some cool, like John Singleton, I think, won in 91.
Yeah.
There was One False Step, like the director, he won for that, for One False, Step.
Yeah.
And like, I remember seeing all those movies. I'm like, well, I guess I'll go rent them.
Yeah.
And
well, there was a cool time, like Aronofsky was taken off of, like, Pi, was like passed around a lot.
I like that this, but we're talking if, as far as the movie goes. Like she just got out of the bank again, and I like that she like they think she's an innocent. Just like squirrel.
Oh yeah, this is the funniest thing.
Yeah,
I got my kids chuckled at this. They're like, "Oh my gosh, what?"
Like we just you think you're gonna get shot again? It's like no, they don't know that she's taking money that, that someone else has done.
Yeah, she doesn't look like the person that'd be robbing a bank.
Hey.
It's such a distinct look too. It's like tank top, green pants, some kind of like money holder or something.
Well, they're like
back.
they're like checkered pants too. They're like some sort of plaid green and white pants,
and the red hair. It's just like there's so many like visually distinct yet like opposite elements. There she is running a different way through the thing this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she crossed through the diamonds and now she's following the path. Mm-hmm. So. It's Manny. I wish he said, Manny, who's Manny?
The van crashes into the glass this time around, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They used a small bit of dynamite to make the glass explode the way it does.
Oh.
So it's not
the old gag of the guys carrying the gigantic window across the street.
Yes, indeed. Knowingly applied here, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
That probably helps this movie too, though, because it has a sense of humor. Like, oh, yeah. We have a gigantic plate glass of this, and when they tell her she's not the criminal, I like when a movie can be silly but also very serious. It,
and there's a sense of satisfaction, like in comeuppance or what have you, because you, as an audience viewer, you're like, I hope that van doesn't crash on that thing. Also, I kind of wanted to see it crash on that thing, and so it gives you the best of both worlds multiple times. It's like
that's Chekhov's glass plane,
yeah. And the red and the yellow is not too overbearing.
Designing that outfit, like you're saying, considering that we're going to be looking at it so much in this movie, they must have put some real thought into designing her costume because it's almost the thing you're seeing 80% of this movie is a full body shot of her running.
Uh-huh. I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, significant talks about that. With
I mean, her and going as her and Manny would be a great couple's costume.
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen it in college a few times.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Manny be easy.
Go stand somewhere and wait for her.
Yeah. You just go to IMDb and type in Theo James, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, Theo James, Mark. 90s dyed blonde hair. Like.
Not Divergent, and you're fine.
Kind of looks like a Johnny Lee Miller, too. There.
Yeah, there's some Hackers Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just so happy this movie doesn't have circular glasses. That was like a 90s trend.
Oh, yeah.
Wolf. And no skateboards.
Well, this is Germany. I think they shoot you on site for skateboards.
Could have been in the early 90s when we had the flip-ups. With the shades.
Oh, no. I think I have one of those.
I do like because
they're good for baseball.
There's only one person that pulls off circular glasses, and it's Lawrence Fishburne, who's like so black. He's like, yeah. I don't even need the fucking rims. I'm just gonna do just the glass, and that's it.
It's just still brutal.
It is. He gets hit so hard because he goes under the wheels.
Yeah,
he went under the wheels.
Is that a Mad Max quote? Fury Road.
He went under the wheels.
And I love that she drops the bag, so you're like, oh, they're going to do this again. Because the last time they threw up the bag, and you never saw it hit, and then you drop it here. The first one's a red bag. That's, I don't know the significance between red and green.
Well, red and yellow mean danger in this movie.
Okay, so red, so green, maybe because the next one's Go, and not the Brandon Peters show episode Go, that doesn't exist, but Go is in the next one.
Episode 123, Go?
Oh, yeah. That's good.
The fact that he's like twitching and shit, like he's not dead, like, oh, God.
That profile shot of her right here with the red lighting, mm-hmm. just like great lighting and great framing.
I like a good red light.
In terms of philosophy of gently nudging you into the idea that things may happen again and again, but they head towards happening. Right, like they eventually work themselves out and things.
It was like they were almost there. They almost did it.
Yeah, it's like
it's such a nonchalant screw up too. Like, and you think the ambulance not like hitting the glass,
yeah,
would be the one where it doesn't get to him because they'd be too busy, like apologizing, getting information, trying to, but yeah.
This was a Linkletter film. Delpy and Hawk would just be in bed for 80 minutes.
Yeah. This is that scene in Waking Life with them.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is that.
You know, I had to recommend three.
Before Sunrise 2.
Yeah.
before Sunrise 1.5.
1.5. I'm thinking that's the last I'll ever see those characters. I remember thinking that. What
a nice thing to see. Oh, they're back. Oh, too bad.
This, Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, and Amelie are like three of my favorite uses of color-esque films, like international films that really stick out. I mean, I guess Rye Lane, that's in the UK, but
Rye Lane has a very great use of color.
Yeah. Feel overbearing. Like I just dig the look of this movie.
In terms of modern filmmaking, for sure. Like
you're not dead.
I've not been. I like writing about that a lot when I write about these movies and like Blu-ray reviews and stuff. Like the use of color in international film is like amazing to me. It just there's something about it that feels so distinct. Whether it's watching this or like an old Powell and Pressburger movie, like it's just. Something about the way color looks just feels entirely different than what happens in through Hollywood filmmaking. And I don't know if that's a camera thing or production design or what, but there's just something so interesting and like not even like a texture thing, just like the way my eyes register what color looks like in movies not made in America that are specifically trying to be, you know, bright and colorful. It just
I feel like this one manages a grunge aesthetic without looking gross or over, you know,
I agree with that. Like they're in a certain kind of, you know,
they didn't put the green filter on it. Like, you know, like,
well, yeah, cause it's in Germany, not one of those other countries where you have to put the yellow filter on something. But no, you're not wrong. It's like, this could easily be like Train Spotting dirty, but it's not.
Oof. I remember watching that for the first time.
I watched that one.
Was a pass around movie too.
Yeah. Back then. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. See, like, soundtrack too.
Me being slightly younger, it's like, yeah, I rented that VHS and my mom and I watched Trainspotting. Yeah. I was like, all right. Like, and she was confused because the back
of
the
box. A baby died. We were sad.
The back of the box said, it was like, they're going to pull off the ultimate heist because they don't know how to sum up that movie. And my mom was like, when's this heist thing going to happen? I was like, it's not at all like a big part of the movie.
Carlisle's character scared me in that movie. Like, he was. Just the danger in ever present with him.
Yeah, because he's like, real. There's Bigsby's out
like,
there.
Like when I was a bouncer for many years, I'm like, I don't want to ever deal with one of these guys. Like I'll just let you go. Mm-hmm. I'm not fighting Carlisle from Trainspotting.
What's the third one version of this?
I love the yellow train.
Oh, that's right. She finds religion. That's what it is. Good for her.
Just put some thought into the color palette. That's it. Like, you don't have to go overboard. Just put a little bit of thought into it.
That's a great shot. That train shot. That's really good.
Yeah.
What Griffin Dunn was talking about in After Hours, Scorsese was one of the only people to ever shoot him running full out. So, you know, it's kind of fun to watch someone just run full out for a film that isn't Tom Cruise.
Well, there's like a trick they like to do with like, you know, like having them run and just shaking the camera. So like in a close up, so it looks like they're doing that. And I forget what I was watching sometime. I could totally tell it was like three people static, just running in place and doing it. I can't remember what it was. I was like, oh, you guys
Kramer
are doing
versus
that.
Kramer.
Yeah, it was Kramer versus Kramer.
But see, I mean, you also famously don't want to see Griffin Dunn run. That's the other thing. Right. I mean, that's what they think. He was on people's list of top 40 celebrities you don't want to see run ever. And he was number
29. Who were the other 39?
Who was?
Griffin Dunn. Who were the other?
Richard Gere. I don't want to see him run. Sally Field. Maybe. I don't know if I want to see Sally Field run.
Selleck. You don't want to see run. Like, he seems like he would be a fun runner, but it's like at the same time. Like, hey, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. John Cena, definitely not.
Remember, Travolta never runs. So that's the one thing we established.
No, his walking is
no,
so great.
Not at all.
Yeah, I remember that episode, right?
Yes.
What was that? Was that face off?
Yeah.
Face off. Yeah. Cage runs. Ask him to run. He's already there. This guy, by the way, the detail I like most about this guy is that there's like just the slight bit of like slime or mucus in his beard. Like, it's like just hanging down right under the chin.
He looks like he'd be best friends with the homeless guy in Hellraiser.
Yeah.
He looks just like. I don't know. It's like this is him before he finds the box.
He looks like he's on vacation for being the Mexican hitman in Moros Peros, where he's like, okay, fine, let's get out of my cave for a bit. I'll go to Germany. Take it easy here. Oh, look, a bag of money.
Oh, a cube.
Mr. Mueller, by the way,
did you cheer when he shows up in Casino Royale with Mr. Meyer? Like you're like
Mr. Meyer, sorry, yeah.
Mr. Meyer, you're like
I know him from that, and like a few like German specific things that I always think yeah, specifically to Casino Royale because he's such a distinct like presence for like the 5 minutes that he's in that movie.
Yeah,
Royal Flush. Sorry, the cards in that movie always make me happy.
Well, yeah, because that Casino Royale is a completely realistic game that would happen. So the best poker ever depicted. The Rounders of Casino Royale. That's what they say.
Where's my Oreo?
Dropping the most convenient hands in high stakes games.
Like, I want to live in this universe.
This universe where like multiple flushes and full houses happen at the most convenient moment possible.
What happened to you tonight? I had four aces and I lost.
How? This fucking guy I barely know came in. I tried to kill him. He survived that. Then he fucking beat me in poker.
This guy got poisoned next to me and he drank these awesome martinis.
Yeah, the whole table was with him. I fucking threw this party. That's how Mads Mikkelsen addresses things afterwards.
Guys, his eye was bleeding.
Have you written like a piece about like the various contestants at that table? Because that crowd is great. You have the big guy from Snatch, of Mads, Jeffrey Wright. It's just like there's an assortment of characters. I'm like, this is fun. I like this. Like, it's so fun. There's not enough room for like Isaac from the Jim Jarmusch movies. He's busy being like, I have a machete in the back room. I'm going to attack you with at some point.
Oh, I should rank them. That'd be fun.
Rank the poker players that Casino Royale.
Yeah, that's easy to sell.
Brandon, yeah, I hear you talking about. Here's the shitty SD footage versus the
right here. Like they're combining it, and that's. Uh-huh. I don't know at this time. I mean, they're probably editing digitally, right?
I'd assume so. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess.
I mean, it's possible either way. I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's just the degree of difficulty, perhaps.
It's just interesting because you got like two. It's like the comparison of like the DVD and Blu-ray comparison. And you remember they used to put those on DVDs as if they were really showing HD on a DVD.
Uh huh.
Like, what are you? Come on, folks. Like,
do I own a Blu-ray player? Oh, no. It's just them showing me out of my DVD player.
Well, why do I need it? Why do they keep doing the Blu-ray stuff if they could just make it look like that on a DVD? I do know that, like, Warner Brothers was intentionally tanking some of their DVDs just to make them look so much better on Blu-ray. Like, Michael Clayton.
Really?
Looks awful on DVD. And they were trying, because that was one of their earliest titles, and it was like crushing all over. It was really bad. And I'm like, come on, it's like, because like Casino Royale's DVD was amazing looking, and then you get Michael Clayton, and it's like, why is there macro blocking here? Like, come on, like it was bad.
It's but like, and it generally happens because you're at the end of like when something could be at its best. So like, we've talked about those like practical effects being like amazing in 94, and then it's like, but we're not using them anymore. DVDs, I remember having things like the Casino Royale one, or like the Sin City big deluxe set or things like that, where they were amazing sets packed with shit, all kinds of extras and all that, and the video quality is great on it and everything. But it's like, but it's also the end. We're going to Blu-ray now.
I mean, and they moved to 4K before they even got to the full capabilities of Blu-ray. Like, that's the craziest thing. They kind of reached it with DVD, just like a lot of video game systems don't ever get a fully realized their potential before the new one's out.
By example, there is God of War 2 is a spectacular PlayStation 2 game, and then like PS3 comes along and it's like, well, okay, we don't have that's the last hurrah for PlayStation 2.
Oh, bam.
That's the guy that stole her moped, by the way. The guy that flips over on the bike.
Mm.
I feel like that gets overlooked. because like there's a lot of people crash. Like all of it's not random. Like all everybody in there matters.
I would have loved to have been on this shot. Just maybe driving. I probably would have been the person in the car behind her.
No, you'd be the moped guy.
Yeah,
but you're a star, man. Don't sell yourself short.
I did some fun car stuff. It's always fun getting on a picture car with like a camera, getting a minivan and opening up both doors and driving next to a semi. Mm-hmm. Like that was always fun getting those like crazy shots on a low budget.
Let's talk about Tom Tykwer for a bit.
Okay.
He does this. He does the Princess and the Warrior next. Mark, you say you saw that?
I saw that one. It's good.
You saw that one.
And got a tracheotomy scene you won't forget.
Great. I never saw Heaven. That's the one.
Aaron. That's sad.
It's Ribisi and Blanchett, right?
Yeah. I saw that one. I can't remember much about it. It was a long time ago.
I remember like being regarded as like Run Lola Run is so fast, so this movie is like the opposite as far as like its pacing and what have you.
Yeah. Scott and I went to go see an early screening of Perfume, where Tykwer was supposed to do a Q&A after. We were in line. There was two lines at the time. There was us for Perfume. And the other was Pan's Labyrinth with Guillermo del Toro doing a Q&A after.
Heard of him.
And we got to ours, and they announced, oh, Tom Tykwer is not going to be joining us. His flight was delayed. Sorry about it. So I saw Perfume. Didn't see Tom Tykwer, which Scott will always go, but we made right because we got to see Guillermo at Hellboy 2 doing Q&A. I'm like, yeah, we still didn't see Tom Tykwer. Like, but...
I saw Perfume in theaters. I had no idea what I was getting into beyond, oh, it's a new Tom Tykwer movie.
Yeah.
And in the trailer, Dustin Hoffman goes, and you're a perfumer. And I'm like, oh, I'm sold. Why would I not want to see this? And I like that movie, but what a bizarre movie to see with your friends that have no idea what's going to happen in this thing and the places it goes.
Yeah.
It is a wild movie.
It is crazy. Like I didn't
and
know
long. It's like 2.5 hours long.
I need to see it again because I did not know how I felt about it after I saw it. And then Cloud Atlas, I like that a lot.
I'm getting there.
Yeah,
because after Perfume he has The International, which I call one of the most boring movies I could ask for. Despite a movie so boring, we're like, can we like go to the Guggenheim and shoot it up and have an action sequence? Like that's literally like a giant reshoot they inserted in there. It's like it's such a non-movie. I saw it in theaters. And yeah, then Cloud Atlas comes. And at this point, like Tykwer and the Wachowskis have like been friends. Like he's,
and that feels like a great combination too. Like
it
like,
really is. I think Cloud Atlas is pretty spectacular. I really like Cloud Atlas.
I remember everybody hating on it that year. I'm like, come on, man, this is good stuff.
I saw it twice within the week. Like I saw it on the Tuesday, like early, and then it came out on Friday. I was like, I got to take my friends to see this. So we saw Cloud Atlas again.
Pretty sure it made my top 10 that year.
I want
nice
to
Ben Whishaw reunion with him from Perfume too.
Oh yeah.
I read the book for it, and just I like that they swung on it. It had an epic feel, and it felt, I don't know, not dangerous, but it still felt a little punk rock that they got as much money as they did for Cloud Atlas.
Well, it's like a giant indie film because it's all like internationally funded from different places, to the point where like Lana Wachowski's coming out on the screen being like, "Please come see our movie." Like he was like. That was a point where the Wachowskis famously weren't doing press like ever. And that was the first time I had like seen them in such a long time.
Thank you for choosing AMC theaters.
They really wanted to like get people to support their movie, which is, you know, a notable thing.
Well, it's really weird. The Wachowski, I know we're talking about Tom Tykwer, but the Wachowski route is really weird because I don't think anyone's been on board with them fully since The Matrix Reloaded. Like it feels like I'm in this little world. I get excited about their films. I enjoy them, and it's just like I feel like people get mad every time they make a movie because they made a movie. You know, like it's a weird. I don't know, why would I want to see Speed Racer because it's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then
they come out, you know, with stuff like Jupiter Ascending, which that's an interesting miss, but like you know, people weren't excited about it. Even you know. Pre-reviews or anything.
Well, what didn't help is it got delayed like 8 months. Like that whatever buzz it was building, it kind of killed it at that point.
Yeah. Cloud Atlas, I think, kind of got met with.
I do remember walking out of Reloaded. The hype was too high. Like nothing's going to match the Matrix. Reloaded mm-hmm. came out, people dug it, but they were a little less so. Like the door had been kind of kicked open a little bit. And I distinctly remember people leaving Revolutions just kind of pissed off.
I think so, like, I think people there's a thing with Reloaded where I think like the internet, the weak-minded read the internet and go, "Oh wait, I want, like the ain't cool guys think it's stupid." So those are the astute guys I should be listening to.
Meanwhile,
and I think tribalism informs a lot of people's thoughts on films, even if they liked it or whatnot, or encourages them not to see stuff that they sure. could easily take a chance on and see.
15-year-old me who didn't read Ain't It Cool was just like, this is better than the first one, and I still feel that way. I mean,
and that highway chase, and just there's so much to love in that movie mm-hmm. in Reloaded. I don't.
We talked all over this casino scene. I love the kind of breath of relief we all take as an audience when it hits the 20 the second time, and you're just like, yeah. oh boy. After like all the screaming she's doing and mm-hmm. everything, which is like another like kind of random supernatural element that's in this thing where she just has this like this primal scream that she can let out.
But it's set up all throughout where it's like, sure. well, she yeah. screams, something happens. And I love like they have two guys that are on watch there that look like they could be brothers. you yeah. know, the
there's a painting like, right yeah, here. On guy, the, there's yeah. a, read it real quick. There's a painting on the wall. Yep. That's supposed to be the back of
Novak.
Kim Novak.
Of Kim Novak.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Novak, yeah.
Placed there
Vertigo
because,
reference.
Placed there because Tickfer was like, the room is too bare. Can like we do something with that? And he asked the guy to put together a painting of Kim Novak. He's like, I don't know what she looks like. Offhand, he's like, to draw her from behind. And he put it together like 15 minutes. He put that painting together and put it on the wall.
That's the shot. The shot is from behind in Vertigo where he looks
at yeah.
the hole yeah. in the back of her head. Yeah.
Yeah, specifically Vertigo.
You know, Manny kept up like a 10-minute pace during this scene. So he's a good runner, too.
Yeah. In jeans. Oof. Her I mean, pants are at least slacks. I mean, I'm sure they're...
I mean, it's not Doc Martens. So it's, I mean, as far as the footwear yeah. goes. But yeah, he kept up. He did his job.
I gotta wonder, like, so he gets the money back, but this guy's clearly spent some of it. So where'd Manny come up with the missing...
Has he spent some? Uh-huh. Did he even have time?
He's got the blue jacket.
He could have found it.
He bought the bike, and he was buying food when the guy on the bike ran into him. So I don't imagine he spent a lot, but he spent some. So like, man, he's got to like add to the pot, right?
He could have found these things.
Why? When you got 100,000 marks,
he could have went back. Maybe he took the subway back to his hidey hole. And he's so, like, that's where my bike and my jacket are.
What do you assume he does with the gun? Suicide? Hold up a bank, sell it to a pawn shop. Like the face he makes, I just don't. You know, you're like,
oh, he's gonna rob that grocery store.
You gonna rob the grocery? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Easily. That's all right. Stop. He's robbing.
I always thought maybe suicide. I was.
Like, I don't get that impression. Like,
is that the look you get when you're gonna kill yourself?
I mean, he like, oh. put it this way. He was just riding high because he had a bag full of money. Taking that money away from him and giving him a piece of weaponry. I don't think that's his logic. Is I was at the top of the world. Yeah. Now I have a gun. I guess I should kill myself. I feel like,
well, it's not,
like
I mean, nothing's going to happen for me. But
I feel
with
like
the cyclical nature of this. Yeah, the grocery store makes.
I
sense.
Feel like he's going to go rob somebody and get more money. Like he's like, I had the feel of money in my hands. I got to get that back.
All right. When you first saw this, who did you think this was?
I thought like her without seeing him going in. I thought it'd be her father.
Yeah, but it's Mr. Meyer.
Yes, it is.
And are we assumed that maybe he's her actual father through this?
I don't necessarily think that, but the way that Lola, when she first runs into him and she says mm-hmm. Mr. Meyer, like in a way of familiarity,
yeah,
you can certainly read it that way. That's not a bad read, but...
Well, we see that her mother is, you know, a cheater on the phone with somebody, and then we have the talk about, we find out her father's not her father, and he says her father's been dead, but maybe that's something that the mother said. And then this guy Meyer has a conversation, I never wanted children, or I plan not to have them. So I wonder if the irony is that he did have a child, the other guy didn't, and his child's Lola.
Possibly.
Isn't that the guard though, the security guy? Is that not him?
Is that him?
It's not the security guy.
Because I was listening to the commentary, and there's a scene in the commentary where he touches his heart. Like he has a heart problem, mm-hmm. and then they're like, it comes back and it's important later on.
Is it the security guy?
It's always been hard for me to make out who that is.
Because on the commentary, they said that he had a heart issue on the second one when he touches his heart.
Look at his clothes. Like, oh. He looks like the
security. He does have
guy.
The blue. It does.
He's not wearing a. He's not wearing a suit.
I've always gone through the head on collision and thought it was one of the. Two,
I figured it'd be one of those people. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's a bigger guy. Like he. Look
but is a bigger guy.
It's a bigger
yeah,
guy.
Maybe. Yeah,
that's security guy.
And she shows compassion for the guy who's a complete asshole to her. So, okay.
So you've said that. Is he a complete asshole to her? I mean, I don't think he's a complete asshole
He makes awful remarks to her.
I guess I'm focusing more.
Oh, poor baby. We don't win all of them. Like, he always says shitty things to her every time she's at the bank.
I guess that the one thing I key into is when her father completely dismisses her and he's like, throw her out. He seems more compassionate in that moment compared to
I don't think. I think he's an asshole to her.
It is the bank guard that's in the ambulance.
When he's holding her by the arm and throwing her out, he doesn't like the fact that this is the thing that's happened just then.
I think he didn't seem too happy
about it.
Yeah.
He may disregard her based on like what he believes her to be as far as this grungy girl or whatever. But when push comes to shove, and he's like, "Here's the I'm rejecting my daughter." I do think he has a bit of compassion to that fact.
Mm-hmm. Did she give him the heart attack when she gave him the death stare when she was late and he came outside for the smoke?
In the second one, when she pulls the gun, I guess, and then he touches his heart. Mm. And that kicks off the chain of events.
Hmm. The karate!
Who never said anything.
I wonder if this is why I wore so many Henleys. I was big in Henleys for a while.
Ronnie, out.
This comes back to where we were as far as Yancey, because it's like the agency here, where, I mean, she did the deed, but he handled it. Like by the end of this movie, like the solving of the problem comes down to, oh man, he just found the money again and gave it back to her.
But we know what she's been through even more than she does in the audience.
For sure. We have all the context in the world.
I'm happy this didn't end like a bicycle thief or something. Just you get to leave on a like
comedic note.
Yeah.
Would you have wanted like a flash forward in the same way we got the other ones with these two at the end here?
Like from Snatch and they're in Vegas?
No. You assume that there's going to be a future by hearing the sound of it?
Yes.
So it is what you make of it. Every moment counts, folks.
I forgot those are the backwards titles.
Backwards, yep.
Which sounds like seven, huh?
Yeah.
Seven or what? Irreversible.
Memento.
Vox.
Seven was the first one. I think seven was the first.
I'd be surprised if there's not another movie that has done it before seven. But I mean, it's certainly distinct.
I was startled when I saw it in seven on opening night. I was like,
with
wow.
Kevin Spacey as John Doe.
I just watched a Czech movie that I think does it actually from like the '60s.
Oh, I mean, I guess. Non-American movies.
Sure,
yeah, I'm sure it's been done where it's just more standard, but starting them, well.
I like the Rocky titles coming in behind the credits, by the way. So.
Terminator, yeah, Rocky
or Terminator.
The Predator ones are great, too.
Kiss Me Deadly does it.
What?
Kiss Me Deadly apparently does it.
What, the backwards titles?
That's right,
yeah, yeah.
I guess I just check out when it commentary. Says the end question mark at the end. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay.
This throws me off a little bit just watching it. I mean, maybe because I'm just so used to the other way. But
you guys forgot to mention Next, did it?
Brandon, we can't talk about all your favorite movies tonight. We're already talking about Run, Little Run.
Man, Next. Jeez Louise.
Best visual effects of all time.
And he dodges the trees. Is there a logging truck in that movie? Did I make that up?
No, there's a log. There's a Fox Forest type thing that goes on there.
Yes, it's the Fox Forest.
It's Paramount film, but like there's a Fox Forest.
Oh, yeah.
Type. It looks like the Fox Forest.
They borrowed the Fox Woods for Next because they're like, this is going to be the next big thing.
Like the Fox Woods, like, so like Antichrist has the Fox? What's this?
No, Vancouver. Vancouver. The Fox Wood, the famous Fox Woods featured in many Fox action movies, like various X-Men Wolverine films, The Planet of the Apes, all of them except the new one. Like they all use the Fox Woods, as I lovingly refer to them.
Oh, I see it now.
Didn't finish with Tom Tickford, by the way. Didn't finish off.
He made Hologram for the King with Tom Hanks, a movie I really like a lot.
His midlife, the Tom Hanks midlife crisis movie. That's such a random, like, Tom Hanks did like a random indie with Tom Tickford once, and fairly recently, it's 2016. It made absolutely no money. Got like middling reviews, but it's a very comfortable movie for me to watch for whatever reason.
Hmm. Is it better than Larry Crown?
Everything is.
Okay, good.
Oh no, stop. Just that ends right now.
That's worse than Pirates 4 for me.
I will go on the record and say I like Larry Crown. I don't know why. I think it's a sweet movie. I don't get the hatred at all. I think it's got the single best George Takei performance in any film or television show.
Finally.
I know what I say
oh,
that.
Oh, my.
That's great for him. How he finally reaches the potential.
It's a sweet movie. I don't know what everyone's got against, except that was the week everyone decided they hate older celebrities.
I don't care about anybody else. I just know that's a movie I don't like at all.
I will say, if you like Roland Miller...
Yes, Brandon?
It's a joke. It's a bit.
But no, he's
kind of a day, a night out, crazy night out type movie.
You cut out for a second. All right. What are you talking about?
Recommendation. If you like Run a Little Run, it's a little more comedic, but it's kind of got the same vibe to it. But it's one of those like crazy night after hours type crazy night out movies called Remote Control. It's from 1992 from Iceland. Kind of got the same a little bit of the same attitude and style as this movie. I don't know if Iceland was ahead of its time or whatnot, but yeah, check it out.
I feel like I've heard of this before, and I'm trying to remember if it's because of
that. I talked about on the Brandon Peters show.
That's why. Yeah. There it is. Okay.
Just like Go.
Yeah, it must apparently. Have been before the Go episode.
Before the Go episode.
Oh man, that episode's so good. The run you guys get on about Scott Wolf and his height.
Who was the guest on that one? I wouldn't know.
Good old Scott, 1994 Double Dragon Scott Wolf. Jet ski action scene.
Next to Dacascos, yeah. Two trained fighters, Scott Wolf and Mark Dacascos.
One of the top video game movies of all time, Double Dragon.
That's what somebody said once. Here's a fun thing that I read. And I've actually heard him talk about this. Jason Blum, before he, you know, has Blumhouse, he was working at Miramax for a bit. He passed on this movie.
The acquisitions or
just, yeah, on the chance to like acquire it from Miramax, he passed.
Okay.
It became Germany's biggest hit of that year, biggest original German film of that year, became a huge international hit. Weinstein heard about this and he got mad at Jason Blum. And this is where I don't know if the story is entirely true because Jason Blum's telling it. But apparently Harvey threw a cigarette into his face, like a lit cigarette, like he like to let him know how angry he was that they didn't pick up Run, Little Run, and presumably make it a better movie, as Harvey Weinstein generally does when he acquires films.
needs more running.
Let's cut out 90 minutes of this. Wait a minute. What? How does that? Don't worry, I'll make it back. But yeah, that's one thing. What else? I know the movie's over at this point, but let's see. It didn't get nominated for Best Foreign Language Film.
It's too cool.
Do you guys have any idea what did?
In 99?
98.
Life is Beautiful? Five nominees, you're asking.
If you know the winner, that's the key right there.
Is it not Life is Beautiful? When was that?
It is Life is Beautiful.
Life is Beautiful. Ah!
Hey!
But since this film...
Nick Nolte's favorite movie.
But since... But since this movie is, you know, well regarded, and
Wedding Banquet.
We think no, fun. No, no, it's Life is Beautiful. Life is Beautiful.
Wedding Banquet was 93.
Oh, 93.
Yes. But Life is Beautiful was the winner. The other nominees were Central Station, Children of Heaven, The Grandfather, and Tango. Definitely movies that we all talk about more than Run, Lola, Run today.
They've all been covered on the Brandon Peters show.
I never saw Tango, but I did skip right to Rango. So,
and what to me
I saw Three to Tango, and I regret it.
Oh. It's like, one of those Matthew Campbell Perry movies.
Yes, it is.
That's a great Ebert review.
Can you guess the villain in that movie?
Platt.
It's Platt. I think Platt's in it, but he's not the villain. Mm. I'll give you a hint.
Jeff Goldblum.
You often think of this. You could think of this actor because of the names that they share. But they get confused for each other a lot.
Bill Pullman.
You're close.
Bill Paxton.
Think darker hair.
In that same realm, though, where you say those two names and you're like,
David Keith.
No. it's Dylan McDermott.
Oh, yeah.
But not.
So that's the one. That's where the one where like Matthew Perry likes Neve Campbell, but he's like gay. He has, like, has to pretend to be gay.
Dylan McDermott says that he's gay because he thinks he is. And then like he has to pretend to be because for some reason to like keep this charade going.
The 90s. It was considered progressive probably at the time.
The main thing I remember is that that movie is supposed to be set in Chicago. And the first shot is an overhead shot of Vancouver. And it says Chicago. I'm like, wait a minute. Hold on.
You couldn't even get stock footage?
Hold the phone here.
You got to read the Ebert review because he just talks about Neve Campbell for most of it. And I was like, man, Ebert, you're going hard on
that,
this.
That seems like Ebert's MO for a lot of rom-coms and which ones he can get passes to. You can tell he has a type.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Was nominated for an Oscar. Did get nominated for a BAFTA for a best non-English language film. Won the Audience Award at Sundance. It was, and again, like you mentioned, Mark, it made money. You know, for a movie of this size, making money in America is no, you know, easy task at this time. And
especially in 99.
Yeah. And obviously it's well regarded to this day. And it's, we did talk about its inspiration, but it inspired a lot of stuff. There's a lot of filmmakers that took, you know, and music videos and games and whatnot that took influence from Run Lola Run. It's had a wide reach for a tiny film with no IP potential. Despite the Indian remake that I already mentioned. But yeah, we did it. Talked all about Run Lola Run, which is just a fun movie to watch for sure. Even watching it silently while talking to you guys, because it's just a blast to watch this movie. Great. All right. Well, yeah, that's going to bring us to the end of this commentary track. Where can people find more of you guys online? Mark Hoffmeyer, we'll start with you.
Yeah, just movies, films, and flicks, the website and the podcast, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, and then check out By the Numbers. It's a fandom show. It releases with Honest Trailers. So I got a R-rated rom-com coming up. I got a San Diego Comic-Con one coming up, and I just finished I finished it a few hours ago, and I can't even remember what it is. Oh, like most overpowered superheroes. So you'll see those episodes.
Oh, that.
On
okay.
Fandom.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Yancey, anything you want to plug?
No, you know, Yancey Jack on Twitter. And my appearances here constitute most of my substance these days. But look forward to my next appearance, whatever that might be.
Great. Brandon?
Okay. The Brandon Peters Show is thebrandonpetersshow.com. Currently running the summer of 2004-20 series with Aaron over here and Scott Mendelson. We are on our second month here of wonderful flicks like The Chronicles of Riddick and upcoming White Chicks coming soon. You can follow me anywhere, social media, at Brad4KUHD. In person, I will be at the Days of the Dead convention July 4th through 6th, doing two live shows, a live audio commentary for the movie Glorious with the screenwriter, and then a podcasting panel there. And then, of course, PopCon Louisville at the end of August. More information, popcon.us, but I'll be running the live podcast stage as well as performing live shows there.
Louisville. Great. I love the way you said it.
Well, no, you have to say Louisville. You call Louisville. Oh man, you're gonna get punched in the face. You call it Louisville.
Oof.
They're gonna have a billboard out for you. But they pronounce it Louisville. That's
Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
You can find everything I do at my personal Substack page, thecodeofthegeek.substack.com. Everything I do ends up over there. All the episodes of this podcast can be found on iTunes and Spotify and everywhere else you can find podcasts. And we're on all the socials as well, just /outno_podcast or something, some kind of configuration of that. Next month, we just talked about Run Lola Run for its 25th anniversary. Celebrating its 30th anniversary is going to be a little film called Chungking Express from Wong Kar-wai. That's going to be the subject of next month's commentary track. So stay tuned for that one. But I want to thank Brandon, Yancey, and Mark for joining me for this commentary.
That commentary will take your breath away.
Yeah, go ahead and listen to it.
Thank you guys for joining me.
You're welcome.
Hey, I'm happy to be the sixth man and come off the bench. So whenever you need me, I'm happy to help you out.
And yeah, that's been our commentary for this one. And we're going to stay tuned for next month. So until then, until next time, so long.